Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio SGN. We got a chock full, super packed episode for you. Lindsay's here. Hello.
Hello, I'm here.
And I'm here. My name is Avi Eichenbaum. My pronouns are they, them. We got a jam-packed episode I want to get into, but we were just talking about what kinds of OnlyFans we would have before we started recording, and I want to touch on that very briefly. If I were to have an OnlyFans, I want to make this very clear. I'm not sexy. I know I'm not sexy, but I know a lot about animals. If you want to hear me talk about animals and show you pictures of, like, cool rocks I found, that would be my OnlyFans. If anyone thinks that's a great idea, DM me. I'm doing my hard pitch. Lindsay, you said it would just be you crying?
Yeah, so I am very sexy, if you can't tell by my voice. I'm also very sick with COVID at the moment, again, for those of you that are dedicated listeners. And my OnlyFans would just be videos of me crying. Every time I feel a cry coming on, I would record it. And I think people would pay good money to just see me, like, in emotional distress.
Honestly, that sounds like it could go really south really fast for the types of people that you would be getting. I wish you all the best. Anyway, we've got a great episode coming for you, but we want to start with a pop culture corner, because Lindsay finally watched Megan.
I finally did it. If there was an applause track that could happen right now, it would happen.
I'll put one in.
Thank you. Yes, I finally watched Megan after we've been talking about it for, God, almost a year on this show. I streamed it on Peacock. That's your ad for Peacock, I guess. And it did not disappoint. I gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd because Megan slayed. That's my whole review. Megan slayed.
Amazing.
Yes. Queer icon. There wasn't enough dancing, though. I feel like she danced longer in the trailer than she did in the actual movie. But I give her props to this. The dancing scene came right as she obliterated a tech bro from Seattle. So that was, like, great.
I think it's really funny that you didn't know that it took place right here in the... That's why I knew about it.
Really? I knew about it because she danced and had a great outfit.
She slayed.
She slayed. She did. Yes.
You've also been watching The Last of Us, right?
Yeah, I just started watching The Last of Us yesterday.
Nick Offerman is a very stressed out gay man.
Oh, I love it.
Speaks to me on so many levels. I'm not gay. I'm omnisexual. We've been over this. And I'm not really a man. I'm non-binary. However, if the apocalypse happened, I do have a contingency plan, which I feel like, way to go, Nick Offerman.
I like that. My apocalypse contingency plan, I have been crafting while watching The Last of Us. And my whole plan is to just kill myself. Like, as soon as things go south, I'm dead.
You are not the first bisexual woman that I know that is their only plan for the apocalypse.
That's my plan for more than the apocalypse. That's my plan for I break a nail, I'm like, fuck it. I'm dead.
Speaking of wanting to die, the housing affordability is at an all-time low. We didn't write about this. I just read it this morning. But considering everything that's been going on in my life, I thought it would be nice to bring it up right before we jump to our ads, because we need those ads to keep the lights on. Housing affordability is at 22%. Only 22% of Americans can afford houses at the current costs. For a little bit of context, last year and the year before that, it was about 40%. And that felt like it wasn't enough. So, if you didn't see Isabel Mata's spot on HGTV's House Hunters...
Oh, God.
congrats to you, Izzy. We've got a great episode coming up for you. And you guys should all go listen to her podcast after this. It's called Being Yourself Loudly. And it's a proud member of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network. Now, I talked to Andrew Ashiofu in this next interview, and really informative, very interesting guy, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. All that and more after these messages.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name? understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries. I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at VHIL Family Medicine. Visit VIGILMD.com or call 253-693-0071.
Joining me today, I am incredibly excited to have him on the show. He is the co-chair of the Seattle LGBTQ Commission, the chair of the Washington State Stonewall Democrats. He's running for District 3 City Council here in Seattle. It's Andrew Ashiofu. How are you today? Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ash, for having me on your podcast. I'm so excited to be here to talk to you and to also talk to the people, the listeners as well.
Well, you're an exciting candidate. We've had one other candidate so far on the show. What I like about you, and you have lived experience, and I want to talk about that a little bit. You were unhoused. You are a gay man living with HIV. You have a lot of lived experience to bring to the table, but not only that, you're currently active in the Seattle City government. How does your life inform the policy that you hope to bring to the table?
One thing I always say is, I don't want anyone to go through what I went through. And that's what would bring about the policies I bring, is because I know why I went through. You know, when we talk about HIV, I was actually diagnosed with AIDS, not just HIV. I was at the AIDS point of diagnosis. And the red tapes, the hurdles, and I tell people, if I did not fight to get the healthcare I deserved, if I did not fight to break down the stereotype and the status quo regarding the policies that were created by people who have no stake, but who thought they knew what was best, I would not be alive today. So from the lived experience, I'm coming from to bring practicable policies that are grassroots oriented.
And what would those policies look like?
So when we talk about housing, for example, and knowing very well that housing affects the LGBTQ plus community massively, from unhoused youths to unaccompanied youths to the trans BIPOC people that are unhoused. And we talk about that, and people always talk about building more, but it's more than just building more. We talk about accessibility to housing, ensuring that we have the right access to housing. We talk about affordability of housing. So, you know, one of the good things is the initiative 135 that passed is going to bring about social housing. And we also talk about the availability of housing. We could have all these buildings and all these apartments, but one, they are mostly market rates. So one of a policy is to introduce the vacancy tax to ensure that buildings or units that are not occupied, we tax them. And one of the beauty about those taxes is we can put it to the PDA for the social housing. That's money for social housing coming in there. But another policy I want to push for about accessibility to housing is transparency of units. So creating a city portal, instead of people going to like apartments.com, but going to the city portal, looking at this unit, knowing how long they've been unoccupied, would also create a bargaining tool for reduction of prices so that people could say, see, this unit has been unoccupied for 6 months and I'm looking for housing. Why are you giving me more roadblocks to get to housing? So those are like minor things. Also ensuring that we have more multiplexes, multi-family units in every area to create a 15-minute walkable city. So I would always define my housing policy as European urbanism being brought to Seattle.
What are some other points on your platform?
I talk about public safety and policing. And I tell people, as a Black person, as someone, as a person from the LGBTQ plus community, as someone that might, you know, as a second generation immigrant here in the USA, I cannot in good self-conscience say, we need more police officers. Right. We don't need more police officers. We need more accountability on the policing. We need more transparency of policing. We need to take away services away from the policing to social work, to other departments. When someone is having a crisis, mental health crisis, and they just need to, you don't need the police to go with guns to go to someone that's having a crisis. It's going to trigger more. If someone is having an overdose, why do we need five cops car with, that's 10 cops all armed to just attend to an overdose? We saw how that earlier on this year, someone was killed because the police was responding to an overdose, whereby we could just have the Health One Crisis Center, which we need more funding for, that is under the Seattle Fire Department. And a good example, the Health One only works Monday through Fridays and work hours. So are you telling us we don't have crisis on weekends and holidays or overnight? So that's what we need to take those, we need to invest more in other services. And so that's what I envision for public safety. And we don't need to trust the police. The police department is so damaged that they need to restructure and they need to show that we can trust them. So the community doesn't need to trust. The police has to give us that trust that they lack right now.
Well said. I have no love for SPD. I'll say it right here on the show. In the last few years, the SPD has faced a lot of backlash. What would you say to people who say, well, we need more policing? Because there are people still in Seattle where we did, as the city council did vote to defund them, and then that didn't happen mainly because of small business owners. What would you say to small business owners in District 3 that are concerned about that?
So one of the things I did earlier on in my campaign is to talk to the Capitol Hill small business owners. And this is interesting, is there was a survey that was shared among them during the Capitol Hill CHOP era. Mm-hmm. And majority of them actually agreed that we don't need more policing. Mm-hmm. We don't need more investment in police. We need more community-focused, centric safety coming together as community. The people coming together. And they talked about how it affects the businesses, because sometimes if I see police in some areas, I would not feel comfortable going, because we see the brutality that occurs. And when they say, but I'm also talking about it from, let's talk about traffic stops. A high percentage of police deaths and brutality happens due to traffic stops. Why can't we use technology for traffic fines instead of using policing? So that's what I mean by we don't need police everywhere. Why don't we implement community safety officers and use that as a segue to become police officers? So if someone wants to become a police officer, spend 2 years as a community safety officer, you know, carry maybe your pepper spray and your taser and just walk around and learn. You know, if people are on probation, we use the safety officers as a probation officers. Not everything, we don't need policing. We don't need policing to be, I need to carry a gun all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean.
Let's talk about you a little bit and your involvement with Seattle and your history. So you were born in Texas.
Yes, I was.
What brought you up to the Pacific Northwest?
So when people say, why did I come to Seattle? I think it was, I always tease them and say, Sleepless in Seattle was one of my favorite movies as a kid. But also I just needed to come to discover who I was as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, back then was when I went through a lot of journey on who I was. In, you know, growing up in Texas, I mean, I love Houston, it's home for me, but there was also the homophobia and trying to discover myself in a space whereby I could not be myself, and a space whereby we had elected officials pushing, and everywhere you go, you're hated. You know, I used to go to church, the pastor is talking about how bad it is being gay, or you politicians are pushing. So I needed to come. So I moved from Houston to Chicago for work. And that's where I ended up being unhoused because I lost my job. I lost everything. Then and gradually things, when I say picking up, I went to Boston. And then I was a flight attendant and I was like, okay, finally I could now come to Seattle. So Seattle for me has been, is my home. It's a beautiful place. It's a place where I think I have become who I'm supposed to be. And I see there's a lot of opportunities to bring about representation and voice here in Seattle.
Obviously being unhoused is rough. It's a lot of our listeners have gone through it. I myself have couch surfed from time to time, to put it mildly. How do you feel about the way the city treats the unhoused?
One, I think we don't treat them very well. And I think is based on the stereotype of what it means to be unhoused. Mm. And it's sad because when we talk about unhoused, we only focus on drugs and mental health. And to just hamp on that, I do work with the African immigrant community in Washington State. This year, we lost two people to overdoses, and no one knew they had a drug problem because most of them had good, well-paid job. One of them had a six-figure job and was housed. So, you know, I tell people, yes, we could see some people are unhoused. You know, drugs and mental health is as a result of trying to cope. Drug is a cope mechanism, escape mechanism for some people that are unhoused, but mental health is automatic for everyone. Because if you lose your safety net, you cannot be mentally stable. The stress, the depression, the emotions, you know, I tell people there was a time during this whole process that I wanted to just commit suicide because I thought that was the only way to escape the pain and the darkness. So we need to, first of all, take away mental health and chemical dependency drugs as two separate entities away from housing. Then we put that aside. We now talk about sweeps. You're throwing away properties. You're throwing away the last hope some people have, some people's documentation. And then we now create all these barriers to now recover those identification. Oh, go and bring this thing to get your ID card. Go and bring this thing. But then it's being thrown away. You know, that's why I'm happy about social service, but we need less barrier. It goes back to the accessibility to housing. We need less barrier. People say, oh, you need a good credit score. But someone that is trying to be from being unhoused, it means your credit might be bad for various reasons. You've gotten a job, you're now able to get an apartment, but because of certain barriers, they cannot get an apartment. Or you have a criminal record, and it might not just be, oh, you know, we have the criminal record barrier. So creating policies to reduce these barriers is something I want to do on the city council. And then also, when we talk about housing, I look at it from the aspect of small businesses and social services organization. Majority of them cannot even afford commercial spaces in the third district because of high cost of commercial spaces. Mm-hmm. And what happens is rubber stamp organizations or businesses come and take over. Also creating a platform for small businesses and social services or nonprofit organizations to be able to afford rent so that they can create the services needed to the people at need in the area. That's something that I am also trying to, when I talk about rent and affordability, I'm also looking at it from a small business entrepreneurship perspective and nonprofit organizations that cannot afford the rent, but the services are needed in District 3.
And it does affect everybody, the increased pricing here in Seattle, which I'm not sure everyone always puts the two together. Isn't that strange? So you play dodgeball for the Pride Sports League. What gives? What's going on there?
Well, I've been playing it since 2018. Mm-hmm. We just rounded up our season this week, but it's something I like. But it's also something I think on the city council is putting more money into our Seattle parks and recreation so that we could create more spaces for sports and events like this. And also I remember attending a meeting and they were trying to build stereotype sports in different parts of Seattle. So building more football field and basketball courts South Seattle. And I always say, why can't they build more golf courses or lacrosse fields for us? Like we need to, it's not, sports should not be based on where you live. Everyone should have equal access to the same amenities everyone has.
Are you good at dodgeball? Like how do you fare?
So my team won the league.
Oh, fantastic.
I would say I'm pretty, I wouldn't say I'm a professional, but I'll say I'm very close to being a professional in dodgeball. But it's fun. And it goes back to community safety is, sometimes when walking back from the dodgeball to we're going down to the Capitol Hill because we play dodgeball on Yesler, on this community center on Yesler, is how safe are people just walking around in the night? I've been verbally abused. We're on the KFC on Broadway, parking lots upstairs. I remember walking through and some people were saying some homophobic slurs to me because I was working with someone. So that also, we want to enjoy our community, but we also want to feel safe.
I know that that corner, there is a guy that will go out there with the big, like, you're gonna burn in hell signs.
I know, and we see them a lot during Pride.
Yes, yeah, especially during Pride. They come to all of our events. Well, I thank you so much for joining me today. We're just about out of time. Is there anything that you would like to tell our listeners before we go? Where can they find you online? Are you on social media?
Yes, I am on social media, and my Twitter is the Twitter for the campaign is Andrew. So it's going to be Andrew Ashiofu D3 or Friends of Andrew. And it's also the same thing for all social media, Friends of Andrew. And join us, follow us up. The website is andrewforseattle.com. And learn more. Right now, we're very close to qualifying for the democracy vouchers. If you want, you could go and make a $10 donation and also send your vouchers our way. But thank you so much, Ash, for this opportunity to talk to people.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for being here. All of that information, of course, will be in the show notes, the website, and everything. So if you go in there and want to donate, just $10, right?
$10. And then a democracy voucher. So, yes.
Fantastic. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being here with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Ash. Bye.
Man, I have so many thoughts going on in this little brain. First of all, I feel like we need a disclosure in the margins of this episode that most of us can't afford houses at the SDN, let alone houses that you'd see on HGTV.
Literally, none of us can afford houses.
Yeah, except for Izzy.
Because I believe in a cause. You know
Yep.
what's funny? Actually, now that we're back, sorry, hey, hi. Now that we're back, folks, people may not realize this. We seem very glamorous here at the SGN.
So glamorous.
Our advertising prices are the lowest advertising rates you will find in this state for any sort of print. If you'd like to purchase an ad, if you'd like to hear me speak, it's only about $50 to get on our podcast, and that is incredibly
You
low.
can make Ash say whatever you want for $50.
This is our version of an NPR fund drive. It's like we just did our taxes and we're all like, ugh.
What's the difference between this job and OnlyFans, really?
I don't have to wash my hair after doing this job.
Well, one of our writers, Daniel Lindsley, went to the city of Seattle's official celebration of Black History Month at City Hall this last week. And we already had an interview with Andrew Ashiofu. But Dan also was at an event that Andrew spoke at this week about how Seattle can do more for Black citizens that live in the city. And I thought this was a really important article that anybody who picks up a copy should definitely read. I mean, it was on the front page, so hopefully that's what you're reading when you pick it up. But they touched on the importance of resistance, especially coming off of the heels of the Black Lives Matter protests that were so big a couple of years ago and are kind of starting to resurge again. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on the importance of resistance in the movement?
Well, I don't feel like this article is necessarily about that. I feel like it's about a community coming together and building a process and having an uplifting Black voices, which I suppose in the year 2023 could be considered an act of resistance, given, you know, the sort of white hegemony of politics, especially in the Pacific Northwest. But honestly, I think that this event was really about getting the community together to say, hey, how are we going to uplift Black folks in Seattle? It's a community-led budgeting process, which is very exciting. Community-based organizing is, I have a deep fondness for it, otherwise I don't think I'd be doing this job, you know? It does my heart good to see that it's still happening, even though for generations, Black people who have been in community-led organizing processes have been singled out and oppressed in city governments nationwide. And it's nice to see that this is actually city-approved and that the world might be getting a little bit brighter, you know?
I mean, I think in a way, participatory budgeting is a form of resistance because it's resisting the institutions that have historically prioritized the non-Black community, you know? It gives voices to the people in a very tangible way, which is what this movement's been fighting for the last few years, but also for decades before that.
You know, we're not Black, and so we can't really speak to a lot of the issues from experience that Black people face. And if you want a true-to-life experience from a Black person in Seattle, you should listen to a Black person. All I know is I've seen history, and I've seen current events, and I'm really excited that this is going forward because I don't think anyone should be stepped on by a larger organization or by society at large. Next week, we'll be talking a little bit about the Workers' Strike Back Party that Seamus wants rallying. I mean, 2023 is going to be a year of change. The world does not stop spinning. So let's move right along. What else do we have this week?
We could talk about the Iowa protests, the school walkouts. I think that's pretty big.
Speaking of people's voices being uplifted, in Iowa, a bunch of students walked out to protest anti-trans legislation.
What's really incredible about this walkout is we've seen walkouts. Like in Seattle last year, there were several going on. Those were for abortion access. And usually it's a couple of schools, maybe one district, but this was 14 different school districts in Iowa and Iowa State University, which all walked out in protest of bills before the state's legislature that are restricting the rights of transgender youth. Iowa's not an exclusive state in this. We're seeing more and more bills introduced every day that are attacking not only trans youth, but, you know, transgender adults. We've been seeing bills that are proposing forced detransition in parts of the Midwest and the South. And it's the young people that are rising up, and they're rising up with their voices through movements like school walkouts, which are very important. And this is a story that's being covered nationwide. So they're getting the recognition that they were hoping to receive with this walkout. And I think it's a very important first step.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me that it's 14 Iowa school districts.
Yeah, not just schools, but like the whole districts.
Look, we live on the West Coast. We're coastal elites.
Oh, gosh.
That's my cigarette for breakfast coming back to haunt me. But we're coastal elites, all right? So we have a problem when it comes to thinking about these middle states, right? These, we call them flyover states, you know? But the fact is, America is from East Coast to West Coast all the way across. It's not just us, even though we feel like it, maybe all policies should revolve around our ideals. But what's beautiful about this is that people from everywhere in a flyover state are walking out, are supporting their trans brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is really amazing. It's really, really amazing. And it speaks to sort of the progress that we've made as a nation, hopefully, if not as a government.
Yeah, it is progress in action. I was in high school, 5 years ago now? And I honestly could not fathom, even though I'm from this, you know, coastal state, that many students walking out in my district to support trans youth. It would have been unheard of. And to see that in a state like Iowa, it's really inspirational. And I think it speaks to this greater movement, this greater moment that's happening right now in terms of, I mean, I don't want to use the word war because that's so crazy, but it feels like there really is a war going on against the trans community with conservative lawmakers right now. And it's amazing to see this many allies and people that are willing to support and walk out and put their necks out there, be seen supporting a community that maybe they don't even belong to. So I just think it's really inspirational.
It's nice to see that people are supporting the community even if they're not part of it. Because again, it's another step towards equality for everybody. In sort of shit news, so this is local in that it is in Washington State, Kennewick, and the Tri-Cities unanimously passed a new school policy on race and curriculum, and they fear that critical race theory was being taught in classrooms. They've been fighting about, for a while now, pride flags in the classroom. They're trying to pass a ban on political or quasi-political flags.
In this school district, a pride flag is deemed political, but the United States flag is not.
I remember when Angela pitched this story and Benny ended up snatching it up, I had forgotten that people say the Pledge of Allegiance. I haven't been in school, at least in high school, for 10 years, right? And even then, I don't remember saying the Pledge of Allegiance in high school once. Not a single time. Part of that could be because I read the morning announcements, but let's break down what it means to say the Pledge of Allegiance real quick. Because from the outside looking in, it's kind of insane. Everyone stands up and puts their hand over their hearts. It used to be that we stuck our right hand out in the air, but because of the Nazis, we stopped doing that. Fun fact. So we put our hands over our most vital organ that also signifies love and respect and admiration. And then we look to a piece of cloth, and we pledge allegiance to it, implying that the flag is also our nation. And people get really upset when other people don't do this because it's anti-American, it's unpatriotic. What it is jingoist nationalism in action. It's a sort of indoctrination of children into respecting a brightly colored piece of cloth that is also put on paper plates.
Well, you also can't forget the ties to religious nationalism when we are also saying that we believe in one nation under God.
Which also was added after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
We did not used to say that. It used to be one nation indivisible. And by adding one nation, was it under God?
Yes.
One nation under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all, is that?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I do remember one year, I have to state this, I was not raised religious, we've been over this, but I, as a joke one time, I was like in the fourth or fifth grade, I thought it was very funny to add amen under my breath very quickly.
I used to say amen too, but that's because as somebody raised Catholic, the only other place where we would all stand up and recite some like words that you didn't really understand was in church, and it always ended with amen.
It does feel like we're worshiping an idea and a symbol. It is a sort of religious indoctrination in a way. It's very strange because I find that, this is just my own opinion, when we pray to a deity, I believe that we're actually praying to an anthropomorphization of an ideal. So when we pray to, like, let's say the Egyptian god Thoth, let's throw that one in there, the god of writing, the god of mystery, or the god of curiosity, like, let's say I pray to the Egyptian god Thoth as an example. That's because I've assigned character traits of my own personality that I actually find worthy of worship, right? So in essence, when I pray, I'd be praying to these aspects of myself that I find laudable. So the deification of our own personas, our own personalities, is actually what I believe to be prayer. Again, just my own thoughts. I believe that when we choose to pray for strength, we choose to pray for, you know, good things to happen to us, it's our way of reminding ourselves to subconsciously reset our own brains to move towards these things. So when you have a religion like American Christianity, which is so diverse and so spread out and so different, everyone interprets it just a little differently, and it's so broad-reaching that it can be manipulated and turned into something very hateful, which Christ was not a hateful person, but Christianity arguably can be. And you know this from experience, having grown up in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you see these people praying to the Lord for wealth, praying to the Lord for strength, praying to see our enemies destroyed, right? That's because they've been raised to be hateful or they've been raised to be greedy. They live that way because we live dominated by the American dollar. We were just talking about how it's hard to live in this city. No one can afford a goddamn house, right? And then they just kind of assign that to Christ. This is a roundabout way of me saying, I believe that we do that in schools with our American flags. Because we then deify the idea of patriotism. And when you take a toxic culture and assign it to, under God, this flag, it becomes indecipherable from our own wants, needs, and hates. With that being said, banning pride flags makes no fucking sense unless you want to ban all political flags and stop saying the Pledge of Allegiance because it inherently is divisive and potentially bad for developing minds. I think it's a bad way of setting a mindset for students who maybe don't have heroes to look up to anymore.
I also think that there's something that needs to be said about why we're deeming the pride flag a political flag, because if you dissect it, there is nothing political about pride. It's about individualism, it's about love, it's about community. But, you know, there was never a group of gay people that decided to conquer another group of people in the name of, you know, being gay. It's
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have to disagree with you on that one. I mean, historically, I don't think there has been a group of gay people that's been like, we're taking over this land. But, well, that's not true. We can talk about appropriation maybe some other time. But I think that the personal is political.
Mm.
You know, we craft our own belief systems. We craft what we choose to live in and believe in. And being political doesn't necessarily mean conquering. Being apolitical doesn't necessarily mean being moral or ethical, right? There's no way to live in the United States as it is because everything is political.
I do agree with you that everything is political, but I think that you need to be able to categorize things because at the end of the day, you know, like I said, I agree as somebody that studied political scientists that you can't do a single thing without having some influence on politics or making a political statement. Even the act of putting on a t-shirt, you know, can, when you break it down, be political. But when you're looking at terms of what's going on in the classroom, then you would have to strip every motivational poster, every color from the wall, because there could be political ties, you know, assumed or interpreted from just about any message that you send children. So I think that when you break it down into what the school board deems political, you can't be deeming pride flags political any more than you can be deeming Hello Kitty or, you know, any form of expression that children may be allowed to have.
Well, Hello Kitty is an evil symbol of a hyper-capitalist organization, but we don't have time to get into that right now. That was a joke, guys. I'm joking, but it's true.
Before we wrap up, do you want to talk about West Virginia by Mike Andrew?
Blue Ridge Mountains?
You know, honestly, if we're hopping back to the pop culture corner for a second, when I was in the worst bout of COVID this week, all I could do was sit and listen to that song on repeat over and over again.
Your fever-addled brain craved John Denver.
It did. It did. I don't know what compelled me, but I thought that country road, I was going home. And the NyQuil brought me there.
Well, they ended up passing that fucking bill we were talking about, huh?
Yep.
They're calling it Right to Discriminate Bill, which sucks.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this bill basically says that they can not observe gay marriages, say that they're not legitimate in the state, even though the Respect for Marriage Act was passed last year and Obergefell versus Hodges has not been overturned by the Supreme Court. They're basically like, fuck you, federal government. We do what we want.
The bill stipulates that the government would not be able to substantially burden someone's constitutional right to freedom of religion unless doing so in a particular situation is essential to further a compelling governmental interest. Which means that unless it is in the interest of the local government or the state government of West Virginia to recognize that you're queer, if you have a religious thing against people who are LGBTQ, they're going to uphold it. They think there's a war on traditional families. There's no such thing as a traditional family. It's an idea that was put in our head by media to sell Father's Day cards. anyway. How's your dad, by the way?
Oh, my God.
Speaking of homophobes, is he good?
You know, I don't know. My W-2 form got mailed to him, so he now knows that I write for the Seattle Gay News.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, gang. We have had a great episode. I really appreciate each and every one of you. There will be another episode, even on the week I am out. Our guy Daniel Lindsley is going to be stepping up and editing that. And then don't forget to follow us, share us with your friends, share us with your enemies, your frenemies. Give us that 5-star rating on Spotify or iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever the hell it is called now.
And just take care of yourself. Don't get COVID. It's embarrassing.
Read all about us at sgn.org. We just got our headshots back from Nate, so those are going to be online soon and printed in the Pride Guide edition of the paper this coming June. So that's very exciting. If you want to support us, you can go ahead and press that donate button at sgn.org. Because, hey, we are scrappy, but there's only so far that being a stray cat will get you in this cruel world. Lindsay, anything you want to add before we head out?
No, I guess if you haven't seen Megan, please watch it. I want to know what you think, Lindsay Hive. Megan Slade.
I love that you have fans, and I have... I think they're all here for you, if I'm being completely honest.
Oh, my ego doesn't need that today.
Sure, it
actually, does. Actually, it does. Yeah. I'm so sick still.
Take that little ego boost. Well, Lindsay Hive, I guess that's what we're calling our fans now. Well, Lindsay Hive, it's been great. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.